that's a big one. The tabernacle, priests, and sacrifices. Whatever you want to make out of the treasure.
Thanks, Max. The tabernacle, priests, and sacrifices. It's Exodus 25-ish through to about Exodus 30. Takes up a big bit of the Bible. I think we'll start with prayer though. Might take in those prayers that we've just asked for, and also ask that whatever I end up doing up here is how it should be, and how you guys interpret it is how that should be too. Not how I do it, how it gets done. Lord, thank you for this evening. Thank you for the people here and for your word that's in front of us. Lord, I pray for the people. For the people that we've asked to be prayed for just before, the young man who was killed on the worksite, Lord, and for the family. We also pray for those, the guys from Scripture Union who had that young child who died. I pray that you're with them. I pray that they're supported and helped, Lord. I also pray for Yol's group on a Sunday. I pray that that group grows and blossoms how you need it to and how you want it to, Lord. I pray for the support by prayer and by thought of this congregation and others. I pray for your help in the next period of time as we're trying to present and trying to get an idea on what the tabernacle meant to the people, Lord. And I pray that you'll edify those in your own time, Lord. In your precious name, amen. So why do we have a tabernacle? Why do we have a tabernacle? What is a tabernacle? Okay, so it's around about 1100 BC, could be 1300 BC. That's the rough time frame that I get with Exodus here. And God instructed his people to create a tabernacle. What's a tabernacle? I've got a great little diagram that shows me what it is, but it also tells us what it is in the Bible, and that's at Exodus 25. I've got on this worksheet, I've got a general description of the tabernacle, and what I might do is I'll read through it. If you want to close your eyes, if you want to imagine it, go your hardest. So it says, let's pretend we're beginning our tour now. It's a building of some description. So you're walking into it. The first thing we see as we approach the tabernacle is the outside wall. So I apologise, we're not walking in, we're on the outside. It's made of fabric, curtains hung on a post. So it's a tent. It's pretty much. The wall is 70 feet wide and 150 feet long. There is only one entrance to the tabernacle. The entrance is 30 feet wide. So it's 10 metres wide is the entrance of it. Once we walk through this entrance, we're in the outer court. If we walk straight ahead, we will come to our first piece of furniture, a large square altar made of wood, covered with bronze. After passing the altar, we come to the second piece of furniture, a wash basin to wash in. Next we walk forward and see the actual tabernacle. It's only 15 feet wide and 45 feet long. So a room within a room. It has walls and a roof. I don't know what it's made of. What would it be made of? Curtain? Bricks? 1100 BC. They had bricks and mortar back then. They made pyramids back then.
Well, very temporary travel. They used to ship it.
Yeah. So more timber or more curtains? Or?
Tent type stuff. I'm not sure what it is.
Cool. Fabric curtains that were covered with animal skins and hides hung between wooden poles. It looked like a giant tent, as we said. As we enter the tabernacle, We are now in a room called the Holy Place. If we stand still and look to our left, your left, my right, you'll notice a light. What is the light coming from? It's a lampstand made of pure gold with seven holders that burn olive oil. The burning olive oil gives off a light similar to candles. There is also something against the wall to the right of us, your right, a table. It's made of wood and covered with gold. And there is also something on the table, and that's bread. If we continue walking forward, we see right in front of us another altar, the altar of incense. It's a small altar made of gold. What do you think that it's used for?
Burning incense.
It's an altar of incense. Think so? Okay. Finally, just beyond the altar of incense is the entrance to another smaller room. The entrance is covered by a beautifully thick veil or curtain. So it's a room within a room within a room that we're walking into. If we open the veil and step inside, now we can enter the most special and beautiful room of all, the most holy place. In this room, there is only one piece of furniture. It is the most important piece of furniture in the whole tabernacle. What is it? It is the Ark of the Covenant. Where did that come from? Moses brought it down from the mount? Ark of the Covenant?
They made it, but it contained the,
yeah,
tablets.
The tablets that he brought down?
Yeah.
So, we'll keep going. The Ark of the Covenant is a wooden box. It's about this big. It's about 3 foot long, half as wide and 2 feet high. It's only a little box. And it was completely covered with gold. The Ark also made a special cover of it, made of solid gold, called the Mercy Seat. It's a very special room because God said that this is the room in which he comes down to be present among his people. It is in this room that God shows his glory, showing his awesomeness, his greatness, his beauty and his worth. This is the end of the tour. The tabernacle, as it says here, was no ordinary building but something beautiful, wonderful and extraordinary. The tabernacle was a place of God's covenant people to come and worship in and enjoy his presence. We don't need to look at Exodus 25, but Exodus 25 shows us the ark, the lampstand, the tabernacle, the altar of the burnt offering, the courtyard, what it was and who it was and how it was to be made. Exodus 25 starts, "The Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to bring me an offering. Down a bit and it says, have them make a sanctuary for me and I will dwell among them. Make this tabernacle and all its furnishings exactly like the pattern I will show you." And God does that through those chapters. He says exactly how he wants it done. How's this imaginary tour? How's this beautiful place? 1150 years BC, 3,000 years ago, give or take 500 years. They've come out of wherever they've come out of. They've been in the desert for a while. Fair call.
Yep.
And all of a sudden God says, right, I want you to build this place so I can be in the holiest places. There is a problem with our imaginary tour, and that is that if we've been an ordinary Israelite, moving back in the time of this special tabernacle, we would have entered the outer court. But then our tour would have finished because the tabernacle was off limits to sinful people. That's a really good point.
I think I know the answer.
It's a really good point because...
aren't we all sinful people?
Yeah. So, only the special people were allowed into this tabernacle. And they were the Levites, which are a Jew, a clan of the Jews, fair way of putting it. So, Everyone in here stand up if they're a Levite. So we're in trouble. So who was this? Who were the special people that were allowed in? And what made them special? It's a really good question. They were chosen, of course, because God chose them. He said, you're Levites, you can go in there and be priests and do all the right things, and there's a lot more to it than what I've just said. They were very special.
There still was sin with men, were there?
Is there such a thing?
No.
As a sinless man? Well, maybe one. He came along a little bit later and, yeah.
They had a special permission to go in there.
So, God chose certain men to be mediators. They were called priests. This was a very special job. God commanded them to dress in very special way, to wash themselves in special ways, be trained to follow very special, exact instructions. Day and night, year after year, they were to act as go-betweens between God and his sinful people. God decided that all priests must be men and must only by the tribe of Levi. God said to his sinful people, God said his sinful people were to come into the outer court. They were to bring certain kinds of animals. They must lay their hands on the animals and kill them with a knife in order to shed their blood, blood for blood, to replace sin. Then the priests would place the dead animals on the bronze altar and offer them to God as sacrifices for the forgivenesses of sin. So this tabernacle and these priests had a role. And part of that was to sacrifice animals and forgive us for our sins. Blood for blood. I think it's really great we don't have to do that anymore, per se. Now, the priests also had another important job. They were allowed to enter the holy place of the tabernacle and worship God. In doing this, they were entering a holy place on behalf of the people who were not allowed to enter again. Acting as go-betweens, God gave the priests very special instructions. It's going over a bit on how to do things. If they disobeyed these instructions, they would die. But even the priests couldn't enter the most holy place, which is the room inside a room inside a room. A very small little place there. It was too special and too holy. The most wonderful and beautiful place in the tabernacle was off limits to even the priests. And this is where the high priests came in. There was a hierarchy back then. And they were able to come in one day a year, and that was called the Day of Atonement. It was the most special day of the year for Israel. God chose one man to be high priest on the Day of Atonement. This man would have to follow God's instructions perfectly, and then he would be allowed to pass through the thick veil. Imagine, remember the thick veil. Into the most holy place, into God's awesome presence. He would take incense with him, the blood from the animals that had been killed. He would take the blood and sprinkle it onto the mercy seat, so the people of Israel could be forgiven and God would continue to dwell with them. In doing this, the high priest was acting as a go-between for God and his people. For only a few minutes, one time a year, the high priest was allowed to experience this awesomeness of God and his glory. So imagine if you sinned the day after the Day of Atonement. Would you have to wait 12 months to be right?
Was it that high priest have the rope around his leg to pull him out
of case anything? Yeah. So I think there was a backup. An old mate with a rope around his leg, just in case he keeled over while he was doing it. I got a bit hot in there or whatever.
No one could go and get him.
You weren't allowed in. So as Jude said, they had a rope on him. I'm the most holiest man in the whole world. I'm going into this room. Better attach a rope just in case I keel over. Whew. I don't know how. I don't know how many times that worked, but sorry.
Died because I hadn't done
well, that's right. If they were sinful, that's right. so be it. It's really easy at this point to say, you know, all this has been superseded by Jesus. There's a heck of a lot involved in that, and there's at least that much of the book to go through to figure that out. But that's not why we're here. We're here to understand what this tabernacle's about and why it was here and who did what and how they did it. I can't justify this. I don't need to. God did it. So maybe we could suss out why it was that God did it. Why would God go through all these instructions and get this thing built? And maybe what's the modern equivalent of it? And what are the people in today's society that would be allowed to go to these? Must have been an event, the Day of Atonement. So I suppose the question is, let's say we all went to the Boxing Day test. A bit of a cricketer. And only the very special people in the world were allowed to go. Who would they be in today's society?
Australians.
They'd be Australians. All right, that's good. Yeah. So they'd be Jewish, but Australians, because only Australians go to the MCG. I'm not trying to put MCG and the tabernacle in the same vein. I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm just saying that let's say that there was a tabernacle that was one day a year, it was an atonement, and it was in Australia. Who would be the people that would be allowed to go to that? Who are the top rankers?
Politicians.
I wonder if they'd be able to be allowed to go into the most sacred place, but anyway, we'll figure that out later. Yeah. Oh, you could get a... Imagine Mark Knight or someone getting an illustration of that or something. Who would they be, yeah? Politicians? Who else would be the...
Sports heroes,
yeah, cool.
Yeah. There could be people interested in cricket.
Oh, no, we're going to the tabernacle now. Sorry, take the cricket analogy out. It's ridiculous. Well, yeah, but then... Yeah, Bradman, well, he's dead, Jackie. But yeah, that's all right.
He didn't say that to be dead.
No, all no, right. Well, all right. Well, seriously, so God said, you guys that are priests are allowed into this to the most holiest place so that we can dwell together. And one man, the holiest of priests, or the top priest, he was allowed to go in this very special room and do all that. It's just interesting to relate it to where it would be today. Who would be in there? Sorry?
The believers.
Believers, yeah, okay. Yep. So would we be able to be in the outside of the tabernacle?
As then, though, or now?
Well, I'm sort of trying to relate then to now. If we have had a tabernacle... Well, we're in the Old Covenant, aren't we?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So I'm just pretending that the Old Covenant is here.
Yeah, okay.
So we'd have to nominate somebody. We'd have to have a vote.
Priest.
Oh, yeah.
Pick a tribe. Yeah.
God's chosen people to start the nation of Israel. It was then, so whoever is equivalent of chosen people might be now.
So would it be us?
No, because if Jesus hadn't died, then you've got access.
So we're not allowed to dwell with Christ? Oh, sorry, that's wrong in itself. Because Christ isn't around, is he? He's another 1,000 years or so down the track. So that's cool. I'm just trying to shift my mindset too. So...
We'd be allowed in the outer court, because we were just called before the Gentiles.
Yeah.
Yep. We're allowed in the
court. And if we had a sin, would we have to go through a priest to get that forgiveness? And we'd have to...
Bring our sacrifices.
Bring our sacrifices, slaughter our cows and our sheep and our...
Birds.
Were we allowed to eat that meat, by the way?
No.
Oh.
The priests were.
Oh, the priests were.
Most of it, not all of it.
They were... Pretty jolly like me, were they? Pretty happy?
Oh, that was their main food source because they didn't work.
No, they were too busy being good.
Priests.
Priests. I think it's always nice to put yourself in what these guys are, where they are, because this was written at that time. And God said, this is why I'm doing this. This is what I know. This is what I'm doing. This is what I want you to do. And so we'll go back one step and sort of figure out why God wanted us to do that. Why does God want us to build a tabernacle to do those things?
The scripture says that this is a replica of a heavenly tabernacle, so whatever is up there is in some small way replicated. Yep.
And God wanted to dwell within that, or with us through that?
Yeah, in his wealth just above the mercy seat.
Yep. So even back then, God created us, and he wanted to be with us. He wanted to have a relationship with us.
But only on his terms. Which is not politically correct in democracy, because how it is.
But after 40 years in the desert too, was it trying to show us his majesty in a small way? It's a huge tabernacle, lots of ornate whatever. But after being in the desert for 40 years, they had desert for 40 years. This must have been some magnificent thing for them to see, that they could build this to show.
Yep.
Oh, I find it funny, it's interesting, they carried this thing around, they put it up and pull it down. So it's actually like the Holies of Holies was just a tent. So most of them are probably, like they would see it as they were setting it up and stuff, but then they had to actually anoint it, and it was then that it became where the presence of God was. So it's kind of funny, because it's like everyone's probably seen it because they put it up and pull it down. But it was only after they had to go around and anoint it that it became that.
Is it?
To use it to go across the Jordan. So I think, I can't remember how far it was that all the other tribes had to be back, but they would have probably seen the Jordan bank up. They would have seen the ark in the middle, as the water stopped.
Is it fair? Sorry, Jack.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that it really was only sacred once the presence of God was, because the ark is what, like, it was all about the presence of God being in there, from what I understand. So I think it's interesting that it was, it became that, it wasn't the materials itself that was sacred, it was actually what happened to it once it was
the ark was sacred. Object in a sense, but only sacred because God, as you said, his presence was there in some way. It wasn't necessarily his glory at the time, but if anyone touched the ark, they died. So, and that happened a few times.
To go into that room where the ark was, it was just a room until that was there and anointed.
Was it just a room? In that, these were the finest of materials used to create this tabernacle.
Just anyone that would be able, wouldn't they have special people to put that particular room together?
There would have been a group of people. I'm trying to sort of get to the, maybe an idea that came through there was this a special room or was it just a tent?
That was a special room in the tent.
Also, it seemed as though it was quite large.
But it was made by skilled craftsmen, when God directed them all to make it, he said it's got to be made by the skilled, specifically skilled craftsmen that do this and do that and do this. So I would imagine it wasn't just the Levites building it even.
He actually gave them the skills they needed to make it.
Very specific.
He blessed them with those specific things each.
And these were
the presence of God is that key thing, because obviously prior to that God was, in terms of his presence in relation to his people, he was like, spoke to Moses through the bush, burning the bush, but other than that there was not a specific spot where God was. He was there.
There's also a sense in which when the tent was pulled down.
Hang on a sec.
Sorry. I was just gonna say that then God is obviously wanting to engage with his people and lead them and make something more tangible to them that they can relate.
Yeah.
And God says, yes, it's on his terms, and it has to be fantastic and beautiful and for him to be able to dwell in it, because he's so good and beautiful. But the key, I think you mentioned it before, was about God was wanting to be with his people in a way that they can relate as much as possible. Like he was coming to them rather than them having to cross the bridge to go to him, and not, Bob will talk about Jesus later on. That is exactly the same thing, that is God coming to us to restore relationship rather than us being able to do anything to go to him.
I just want to put something to you, that the lampstand, it's once again, it's Genesis 25. The lampstand made of pure gold and hammered out, base and shaft. Its flower-like cups, buds and blossoms, shall be one piece with it. Six branches are to extend from the sides of the lampstand. The tabernacle. Make the tabernacle with 10 curtains, finely twisted linen, blue, purple and scarlet yarn with cherubim. The work in them will be of a skilled craftsman. All the curtains are to be the same size. The table. Make the table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long. Overlay it with pure gold and make gold moulding around it. This is really specialised and really beautiful stuff of its time. You couldn't just sing down to the gold shop and get yourself a bit of gold and bang it out. This was really precious stuff. This was really hard to get. And this was put... This was really special. Not people didn't have gold chains zinging around their necks.
That's a lot of gold to talk about.
And it's a lot of gold. So I'm also trying to just put through to it that this was a tent, but it was a beautiful tent. It was a large tent, and it was made beautifully.
They lived in tents, so that it was still very special. Because that's all they lived. They didn't have brick fields and brick houses. Yeah. So even though you're saying it's a tent, it was like the Taj Mahal of tents.
So how could we relate that to today? If we wanted the best of stuff for it is a building, we'll call it a building, not to displace it from what it means to people, but what would we use today to do that?
I think your analogy though for the cricket, I'm still going with that. Because you think about the MCG, when we went there for the footy, we weren't allowed on the oval, we weren't allowed near it. Only the people who have got where the Guernsey is, all out of there. So imagine them as the priesthood, and then you've got the hobnobs who run the place, who are allowed to go wherever they want.
Yeah, because we get to section 32 and it's all over.
Well, we can't get into the fence.
No, because that's where the members are.
So that's what I think your analogy there. It's not probably what we would say holy of holies in our society, but in terms of cricket or AFL, say that's your religion.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, that Paul that says that he was going to leave his tent, his dwelling place, to go where he fell and died. So to me, the equivalent is that the leader is the tent, equivalent to what the Levites sell.
Yes, and I can appreciate that it is, but I really want to just focus on this time. I want to focus on what this is trying to tell us is of this tabernacle and the priests and what they did, and what their role was, and how beautiful this room was, and what it meant. Not necessarily what it meant to us, but what it meant to God, I suppose. Because he probably instructed us to do things for a reason. Because he wanted it.
The instructions were certainly very complex, and there was many layers to the tent itself.
Yeah. And I think that was just to allow people to have a relationship with God. I don't know how many people were around. How many Jews were in there? Millions? Thousands?
Several hundred thousand.
A couple hundred thousand?
Probably six.
So there's Geelong's worth of people. And they've got this God that's taken him through the desert for 40 years, and all of a sudden he's set up a tent, a tabernacle. Because apart from that, where was... how did God relate to these people? It's just an interesting concept.
It's hard to think of a modern equivalent, Joe, because I think it was a temporary thing as well, because in that, they couldn't build it out of bricks or...
It was movable.
They couldn't build like a pyramid as a permanent thing that where God is, because they hadn't entered the promised land, I assume.
Okay, that's a fair call.
And so modern people tend to try and, when they build special things, they build it very plainly. And they probably did then, but yeah, that's where God was actually contrasting with the rest of civilizations around them, I guess, where there was still something that God had to do for his people, but he was there in the midst of them while that happened. It's not like he had a permanent pyramid somewhere in Jordan.
No, they were a transient group of people.
With them during that journey.
Yeah. I seem to recall...
Sam, would you grab your guitar? Yeah? Would you mind playing that 10,000 Reasons just as we finish up? Would it be okay? When you're ready, just start.
David wants to build a permanent structure as a temple. God said, it's a wonderful thing that's coming to your heart to do this, but he had not intended to make it permanent.
Yeah. Yep. So we're all sort of getting around the same. Sorry.
I think the biggest thing was that to show, one, it's a picture to the Israelites, but also for us now having this book over there, without a mediator, we couldn't have a relationship with God. And in the tabernacle, the mediator was the high priest, or we would be.
So did God want us to worship him?
He did, and that was in that particular way.
And this is a conduit to do that?
It was setting an example for us to appreciate what we've got now.
So I'll throw something at you. Think of a big cathedral somewhere in the world.
Westminster.
Yep. Okay. Beautiful paintings on the ceiling. Gold leaf everywhere. You know, a holiest of holiest places at the front where the priest sits at this point. We go there to worship God.
Well, some people think that, but that's not how it is.
Yeah. It's just putting it out there. That's throwing it up in the air and leaving it. But I think God's intention was to have a relationship with his people and for his people to worship him. And this was a great way of focusing that.
And it's not on what Martin said. It's going through a mediator that can have part and portion of what we experience
in the new. Anyway, that's that bit of what I have to say about that. So what I was trying to talk about was the tabernacle, the priests and the sacrifices. And that comes through from the blood of the covenant. The Jews, as they walked through the desert, got this tabernacle, a focus on what it was coming from, and then they moved through. And that then moves on to our next lesson, which is Sam next week. Which is golden calf and renewal of the covenant.